Welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh, a place to chow down on topics relevant to writers of all kinds.
Hello, and welcome to Marissa's Wicked Word Nosh. I'm Marissa, and this is a weekly podcast in which I talk about a wide variety of writing-related topics. And sometimes, I discuss a topic that isn't specifically a writing-related topic because a lot of people, including writers, might find a way to relate it to what they do. And in some cases, as is the case this week, it's a topic that writers need to know about, even if it might not be the most exciting topic. Although, I don't know, some of you listening might find this topic incredibly interesting. Last week and the week before, I spoke about the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The first week, I just gave a general overview of the First Amendment. And last week, I talked about defamation and specifically libel. And I was going to do a third episode this week dedicated to the First Amendment, but I kind of changed my mind at the last minute. I would like to reserve the right to possibly do another episode on the First Amendment at some point in the future, because I think I made the case in the last two episodes, indirectly perhaps, but I still made the case that for a lot of us in the United States, including writers, there's never really a point in time where the First Amendment is not relevant. There's always a First Amendment related issue coming up. But instead of doing that, I decided to take this week and focus on another legal issue that I think it's really necessary for writers to know about. What I'm going to do this week is I'm going to give you hopefully a broad overview of copyright, which is a section of intellectual property law that is frequently used in regard to writing, art, films, television shows, that kind of thing. And then next week, I am going to devote an episode to fair use, which is a specific section of copyright law that affects writers and, of course, other creators. Before I get into my discussion of copyright law, I just want to remind everybody, I think I mentioned this 2 weeks ago in my first First Amendment episode, but not last week, that in case, you know, just to clear up any doubt, I am not an expert in this area. I attended law school for 2 years and I did not finish. I did, however, take several intellectual property law classes, and I was even a member of the Intellectual Property Law Club on campus. So what I want to do is I want to take some of what I learned and pass it on to writers, as well as any other creators who might be listening to this, as well as writers who do other types of art. Because not only is this something that I think it will be helpful for you to know, I really think whatever type of writing you do, you will need to know about copyright law to protect yourself. First of all, to be able to earn what you deserve from your work, but also to give you a type of warning about things you might not have known about, areas that you might want to think about before deciding to write something that, say, might be similar to something else you've seen. Something like that. So a lot of what I'm going to be talking about, and I have to apologize, first of all, I don't have a formal script for this. I just have a plethora of notes that I took last night. So hopefully I'll make this sound as coherent as possible, but I was just taking a ton of notes and I was kind of all over the place. So I apologize for that, but I think you'll be able to follow along with a lot of what I'm saying. A lot of the information that I got for this episode came from a webpage that I'm going to include a link to in the notes below. It is from the legal dictionary, thefreedictionary.com. And the first thing I'm going to do before anything else is I'm going to give you a definition of copyright. So according to legal dictionary or thefreedictionary.com, quote, a copyright is a legal device that gives the creator of a literary, artistic, musical, or other creative work the sole right to publish and sell that work. Copyright owners have the right to control the reproduction of their work, including the right to receive payment for that reproduction. End quote. I'm not going to go into the history of copyright law here, although it is very interesting, at least if you find legal related stuff interesting. So I would definitely recommend that you learn a little bit about the English common law that copyright law in the US originated out of if you're interested in that sort of thing. And it might be good to have some knowledge of that anyway, but I'll let you do that on your own. But I think the first major copyright related act passed in the United States was the 1976 Copyright Act, which, according to the Legal Dictionary, quote, provides that copyright protection subsists in original works of authorship fixed in any tangible medium of expression, now known or later developed, end quote. So I think it's important to note that this Copyright Act referred to any fixed of recording, regardless of how new the technology is. That's what's meant by now known or later developed. This is important because back in 1976, which was, what, 45 years ago already, blogs, Facebook, Twitter didn't exist. Really, nobody was, I mean, the internet was nowhere near like it is today. I think it was only used by the government, so people like you and me had no access to it, basically. Assuming you're not in the government, when I say people like you and me, I'm assuming you're not in the government. But if you are, I apologize. People in the government had access to some form of the internet, but most people didn't. So, yeah, so obviously social media didn't exist. Also, podcasts didn't exist. So what I'm doing did not exist back then, at least not in this form. So putting a provision like that in forms of media now known or later developed acknowledged that there might be some forms of media somewhere in the future that would need to be protected by copyright. Of course, since they were in the future, they weren't known at the time. So yeah, so that provision was definitely important. The Free Dictionary also makes a point in its discussion of the 1976 Copyright Act that the most important quality a work needed to receive copyright protection was originality. Originality in this context referred to the person or persons with whom the work originated. It's not meant in the sense that something that, I don't know, seems... Did you ever watch something that it just seemed very uninspired? It seems like you saw it before, or maybe you read a book before that took on the same theme as something you read in the past, and you thought, well, the book I read in the past was just so much more creatively written than this one. This one's just really dull. It doesn't mean originality in that sense. In other words, a work that's incredibly dull but still arose from the brain of a particular person is protected under the copyright law. So originality in that sense. Origin. Think origin here. So the Legal Dictionary page then goes into some detail on works that are not copyrightable. The first point they make is that copyright, quote, protects an idea or vision, not the idea itself, end quote. So in other words, and this has happened before to writers. I remember there was a discussion in Sid Field's screenplay about two very, very, very similar script. I forget which ones they are off the top of my head, but I believe there was some controversy that there were two screenplays that were made into movies within a short period of time that took on pretty much the exact same topic, but they were done differently. So it might make you really mad as a writer if you think that you were the first to come up with an idea and then find out that another writer wrote a book about the same idea. Yeah, that's not protected. As infuriating as that might be, that's not protective. Copyright has to do with how it's expressed rather than the subject that it's expressed about. Again, you don't have to be happy about it. I understand that it can really be annoying when that happens, but, you know, copyright law doesn't protect everything. So ideas are one thing it doesn't protect. Words and short phrases also are not protected under copyright law, and this includes titles. That is why sometimes you might see a book that has a title that's similar, if not the same, as a title that you might have seen before. Now, a Writer's Digest article that I am going to be including a link to in the notes does make the case that although titles cannot be copyrighted, they may be able to be trademarked, which is another area of intellectual property law. It's one that I'm not going to discuss in further detail, at least not at this point in time, but do know that certain titles, and I believe the Writer's Digest article uses the Da Vinci Code as an example, they can be trademarked. So in other words, real quick, I'll just say that if there's a bestseller, an author can have that title trademarked so that another book by the name of the Da Vinci Code that might be mistaken for the original that sold a bazillion copies, it won't be confused with that best-selling work, basically. So yeah, so just because a title is not copyrightable doesn't mean that there's not some way that intellectual property law can still be utilized to protect that title, is what I'm trying to say in a very convoluted way there, which I apologize for. Another type of work that is not copyrightable, according to the legal dictionary, is blank forms for recording information. And the example given here is blank checks that you might go into a bank and fill out a form there, or get blank checks or something like that. Those are not copyrightable. Works containing no original authorship is another example that's given. The Free Dictionary mentions phone books. I don't know if some of you listening even know what physical phone books are, because you can find most of that stuff online now, but I remember when I was growing up, there would be thick phone books that you could, you know, look up people's phone numbers and also names of companies, the yellow pages, that type of thing. Not copyrightable. Any other works that are not fixed in a tangible medium are not copyrightable. So it's hard to imagine this happening in this day and age, but say if there is a dance that's not recorded, the choreography involved in that dance is not copyrightable if it's not recorded. Same thing with speeches that are not recorded. I can't imagine a speech being made nowadays that's not recorded in some tangible medium. But it's possible that there might be a speech that's given at some point and nobody has their smartphone at hand to record it and it's not recorded. So something like that is not copyrightable. Typefaces. Even though they are in tangible form, according to the legal dictionary, they are not usually protected by copyright. And dramatic characters can't be copyrighted. So anyway, so just know that there is stuff that is not copyrightable. A copyright holder is the person who owns a copyright. So according to legal dictionary, this is initially the author or authors of a work. The exception here is a quote-unquote work for hire, which arises in two situations. Quote, one, where an employee creates a work within the scope of his or her employment, in which case the employer owns the copyright to the work upon its creation. And two, where two parties enter a written agreement designating the creation as a work for hire, and the work falls within one of nine specific categories of work designated by copyright law. End quote. I'm not going to go into those nine specific categories, but I do want to focus just for a second on the provision of the first situation that was described, where the employee needs to create the work within the scope of his or her employment. What that means is, if you have a day job and then you clock out for the evening and you come home at night and you write a fantasy novel or a mystery novel, as long as you do that work when you're not on the clock, that is not created within the scope of employment. However, if you maybe have a job that you do writing during the day and while you're at your desk, that technically can your employer can say that they own the copyright, especially if it's done as part of the job that you were hired for. Legal Dictionary notes here that an employer who owns a copyright also holds the right to initiate an action for infringement. And basically, what infringement is violation of a copyright. So, Legal Dictionary then describes five exclusive rights that copyright holders have. The first exclusive right is the one to reproduce, which is basically to make copies of a work. The second one is the exclusive right to prepare new works that derive from an original copyrighted work. So, in case you're thinking of series books, that's correct. An author who conceives of an original novel can create later novels based on that same theme with no issue. If you listen to my episode some time ago, I believe it was this season, but it was a few weeks ago at least, on fan fiction, this is where there have been some concerns among writers, and this is why a lot of writers of fanfic have to put a disclaimer at the beginning of their work when they post it that they are not getting any monetary compensation for this type of thing. But that isn't even enough for some authors. Authors like to have, most authors anyway, they like to have that exclusive right to create later works based on their original works. And they A lot of them, Anne Rice was a good example, definitely don't believe that other writers should have the right to create works based on works that they originally created. So, yeah, so that's where issues with fanfic concerns definitely come in. Going back to the Legal Dictionary, the third exclusive right is the one to distribute the work to the public through sales or other arrangements. So, here you might look at maybe blog posts or something like that. The fourth exclusive right that is mentioned by Legal Dictionary is the one to perform the work publicly. And similar to that, the fifth exclusive right is the one to display the work publicly. Legal Dictionary also makes the case that the first two rights, the first two exclusive rights referred to, can be infringed upon whether or not they're violated in public or in private, or whether they're infringed for profit or not for profit. I think that's very important to keep in mind. And this the rights 3 through 5 are infringed only when violated publicly before, quote, a substantial number of persons outside of family and friends, end quote. I'll admit that because I kind of threw my notes together that I don't know exactly how many is considered a quote unquote substantial number of family and friends, but I would say probably at the most, think your closest relations, not several thousand of your Twitter followers or several hundred of your Facebook followers or something like that. Always err on the side of caution when it comes to this type of law. So, holding a copyright doesn't mean that you own that copyright in perpetuity. An author or a creator is always free to sell or license or even transfer their exclusive rights. I'm not going to get into how you can do that, but that can be done. A writer might say, I wrote this book 20 years ago and I was a completely different person and I no longer wish to be associated with it. So, if you would like to create a series based on this original novel that I created several decades ago, please feel free to. I will license my rights, I will transfer my rights. I don't know offhand any particular cases in which this has happened, but just so you know, that's always a possibility. So, yeah, an author is free to do that. They can do this to whomever they would like to, just transfer their rights in some way. The Legal Dictionary also discusses duration of copyright, and I think this is important to spend a little time discussing. Under the Copyright Act of 1976, copyright protection extended through an author's lifetime and also for up to 50 years after the author's death. Now, there was another Copyright Act in 1998 that extended, first of all, this is important because it extended duration of copyright to all copyrighted materials, not just books and other printed materials. So as of the 1998 law, this was extended to songs, movies, TV shows. And the 1998 Act also included a provision that works created on or after January 1st, 1978 will be protected from the time the work was, quote, fixed in a tangible medium of expression, end quote, for the creator's lifetime plus 70 years. So the 1998 Act took the 50 years after the death of the author and extended it to 70 years after the death of the author. I'm going to go into a little detail in a few minutes about an issue that this raises in the minds of a lot of people. I'm just going to speak really quickly about copyright infringement. Copyright infringement, which I mentioned earlier, is the violation of a copyright. I want you to note that it can be unintentional or intentional. So there might be some people that they intend to do it, but other times it might be completely unintentional. You might have read something in a book years ago, and somehow a line from that book shows up in something you wrote, and you didn't mean it. It just happened that way. You don't even remember what book it was in. You just saw it in a book at some point. But know that when you do that, even if it was unintentional, you're infringing on a copyright. So I would be extra careful when you're writing to, you know, if something you put down came to you a little too easily and sounds a little familiar, do a Google search. Do some kind of search to make sure that you're not infringing on some copyright, because it is possible to do it unintentionally. Evidence of direct copying is called plagiarism, which I'm sure you know, and that can be hard to prove. As the legal dictionary mentions, it's usually established through circumstantial evidence. And there also has to be a quote-unquote substantial similarity between the later work and the original work, as well as proof that the so-called copier had access to the original work. So that's important to note, that copyright infringement, there are two prongs, is what they might be called in legal jargon. So again, it can be intentional or unintentional, and there has to be a substantial similarity, but also it has to be proven that the so-called copier had access to the original work. So what I'm going to talk a little bit about now, I'm going to go back to duration. When an author dies and the 50 years have passed, or for works created after January 1st, 1978, the 70 years have passed since the author's death, a work passes into what is commonly known as the public domain. The public domain, in another article that I'm including a link to, which is on laws.com, called 10 Copyright Laws You Have to Know. Public domain means a work is not protected by copyright. In other words, when a work is in the public domain, this quote means that the works can be used, copied, and distributed without any particular authorization from the copyright holder. This situation occurs when a copyright term expires or the rights themselves have been forfeited, end quote. So a recent example of this, the article that I just referred to used Shakespeare as one example, but a recent example is The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. You might have seen this as well. On January 1st of this year, The Great Gatsby passed into the public domain. So what this means basically is, if you read The Great Gatsby in high school and you thought it was one of the best novels ever, and you have been wanting to create a sequel, you weren't able to do it until January 1st of this year because it was protected by copyright. But now, if you maybe wanted to write a story or a novella based on a particular character in The Great Gatsby that maybe didn't get enough attention in the original novel, or if you wanted to do maybe a graphic novel interpretation, or some kind of film script based on The Great Gatsby, but, you know, with your own take on it, you are free to do that. However, an article that I'm including a link to as well by Alan Wurzbicki called After 95 Years, Writers Finally Get the Green Light to Lift from The Great Gatsby. As this article points out, although copyright is important for creators because it ensures that they're able to profit from the work that they create, it is important. I mean, you have to, or you at least you should, be able to profit from a work if you so desire to profit from it. Nobody else should be able to do that based on a work that you created. Now, again, if that's your intention, that's great. Wurzbicki also makes the point that a lot of people, and I've heard this before, a lot of people believe that copyright protection actually inspires an incentive to create. There might be some writers or artists who disagree with this and say, well, you know what, even if I'm not receiving any financial compensation, even if I have no chance of receiving financial compensation, I still want to write, I still want to draw, I still want to paint because I have it in me and I have to get it out. So if it never makes a profit, I'm fine with that. There are always going to be artists like that. That's great. The incentive to create should not be financially based. I'm just saying, if as an artist you want to profit from your works, you definitely have a right to do that. However, Wurzbicki also makes a point that longer durations are restrictive for the public. So in other words, Wurzbicki states that, quote, of course, we'll never know what 20th century writers or graphic novelists or Broadway producers or painters or poets might have done if they'd had the freedom to riff on Fitzgerald's characters when the book seemed more resonant, end quote. So in other words, there are critics of copyright who say, well, yeah, copyright protection is needed for writers to protect their works maybe for 20 or 30 years after they come out, or even within their lifetime. But extending it to 70 years after their death, that restricts writers out there who might have been inspired by works to create something while the work was still fresher in people's minds, basically. So yeah, so just know that there are people who say that copyright protection is important, but maybe the durations, the 50 years or the 70 years, are too restrictive on members of the public creating their own interpretations of an original work. So I'm just going to finish this discussion for this week by talking about copyright registration, deposit, and notice. I'm going back to the legal dictionary for a few minutes here. Copyright registration is basically just when you record the existence of your work and you include your identity in that with the U.S. Copyright Office. Deposit just means putting the work in a tangible form with that office. And notice or notification is best exemplified by that little C with the circle around it, or the word copyright, and the year that your work was first published, and the name of the copyright owner. So just about any book you read is going to have a page at the beginning that has this information. So, for example, I just pulled a copy of my second novel, Grown Into It. On page 2, at the top of the page, it says copyright, and then it's got the little C in the circle that I was just talking about, by Marissa Delle Farfalle. And under that is a short paragraph, which you've seen in probably countless books. Quote, all rights reserved. No part of this book may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying, recording, or by any information storage and retrieval system, without the author's written permission, except for the use of brief quotations permitted by copyright law." End quote. So yeah, you have seen that in countless books, I'm sure. And again, that is just there to serve the person reading the book with notice that that book is indeed protected by copyright and that therefore they are not supposed to infringe on it. So under the Copyright Act of 1976, authors were automatically given copyright protection when the work was recorded in a tangible medium. And you might have heard the term poor man's copyright. According to 10 copyright laws you have to know, poor man's copyright, quote, is an alternative to registering a copyright and provides for a legal document establishing the creation of a created work as the sole property of the author or creator, end quote. So, in other words, according to poor man's copyright, the work is copyrighted. The fact that it was created by an author or a songwriter is acknowledged. However, somebody who does the poor man's copyright may not be able to sue for copyright if their copyrightable product isn't formally registered. So in other words, I had some musician friends in college who did this. They recorded a demo of some original songs of theirs. They wrote the lyrics, they created the music, and they recorded it. They put a notice on the CD, or in some cases probably tape, and cassette tape, and put it in an envelope, sealed it, mailed it to themselves, and then when they received it, they didn't open it. So just in case one of their songs was ever copied by somebody, they would be able to show that they originally came up with the work, it was mailed, it was postmarked on a certain date, and that established them as the original artist. The fact that they were the original creator of that work would probably be acknowledged, but something like that would not hold up in court. So yeah, don't do the poor man's copyright. It's great probably when you're 15 or 16 years old and you think your songs are brilliant and that's all you're going to need, but you know what I'm saying there. Don't do that. So I'm going to end this discussion here for now. Again, I'm going to devote my next episode to fair use, and I am going to have an actual script because I know, again, I was just rambling on. I thought I was actually going to do a short episode when I said I was going to speak based on my notes, but this is very long. I apologize for that. I apologize for any rambling I might have done, and yeah, I'm going to talk more about fair use next week, and I am going to have a script. So in the meantime, please, please, please let me know what you think of this. And if you are knowledgeable on copyright law and I got something wrong, please, please, please let me know about it because I want to know about it. Email me at marissadelefarfalle@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at @marissad13 and on Instagram at www.instagram.com/marissadf13. Also, please check out my Patreon page at www.patreon.com/marissadf. For $1 a month, I will mention you in an upcoming episode, and for $3 a month, I'll not only mention you in an upcoming episode, but I'll also give you exclusive access to 2 bonus episodes each month. I have a brand new bonus episode on there that I just put up yesterday, and I'm going to be putting up a new one later this month, and I have 4 on there, 2 from January and 2 from December that you can also check out if you become a member. So yeah, please check out my Patreon. And I would also appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcasting app, as it'll help a lot more people find out about the show. Until next time, thanks so much for listening, for all your support, for all your positive words, for your retweets. I really want to do whatever I can to improve on this show and make it more valuable to you as writers. Please, just keep it coming. I need to improve still in so many ways, and it really helps me to find out what you think. So yeah, take care of yourselves. Please stay safe, and peace out.
This podcast has been brought to you by Anchor, which is the easiest way to make a podcast. Go to anchor.fm for more info.